everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our show. Tom, a pretty good rain on the way into the station today, depending on where you work. Actually, some pockets of pretty heavy rain. So,
My windshield wipers got to work out.
They did, yeah. So who knows? I think it's supposed to clear out before later, maybe 5 o'clock this afternoon. Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio on the campus of Bustos Media, where we have now 5 radio stations under one roof. Our latest acquisition is the very popular station, The Drive. But this station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We'll begin with our radio program, our 14th year on the radio, and that would put us into about, let's see, year 36 of TV and radio in the Tucson market. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts going back to pretty much, not pretty much, I know, the first week of January 2011 when we launched the radio show. So a very extensive archive of content for you at buckmastershow.com. When we have our telephone calls, that live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Do a media partner shout out on Friday, TucsonSentinel.com, and I can thank him personally, Dylan Smith, the co-founder, editor, publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. They prominently display the Buckmaster Show logo, which makes it very convenient just to click over to my website. Dylan, thank you for your support through the years. Appreciate it.
Back at you.
Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, thanks to Dan Shear and his team, Tucson Local Media Group, that includes Tucson Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Dylan Smith is my co-media host on Friday. We bring in a media person to join me in the questioning. Dylan, as I mentioned, editor and co-publisher and founder of the online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is president of the Arizona Press Club. He's a past chair of Lion Publishers. Lion is an acronym for the growing online presence in this country, independent online news publishers. Chief Ryan is back with us, the fire chief, Chuck Ryan, back with us in studio. We try to bring in the chief at least every 6 months, sometimes 4 or 5 months, but it's been a while, so we always welcome the chief back. Hey, Chief, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Good to see you again.
It's always serendipitous to bring you in around the holiday season. It's so important for people to think about really some simple things that can prevent not only a call from the fire, from you and your team at the fire department, but let's face it, can prevent a tragedy from
Absolutely.
Happening. What should we be keeping in mind this holiday season, Chief?
You know, it's really basic stuff, and it's, you know, the holidays are super festive, but just some simple things like, you know, not using candles, use flameless candles if you can, right? And if you like the live candles, keep them up where kids can't get to them.
People still do it.
Oh, yeah.
We actually had a guest on the show yesterday who was from Germany, and he was talking about the tradition of a live candle on a tree.
On the tree.
It
yeah.
just doesn't yeah. feel right.
Not recommended.
No, not recommended. So
not
go ahead.
Recommended. Yeah, and if you use a live tree, you know, make sure it's fresh when you get it as best you can and keep it watered. And when those needles start to come off, it's time for the tree to come down. Don't wait until, you know, mid-February. Get it out of the house. Not overloading electrical circuits, right? And making sure, because obviously people plug in holiday lights and whatnot, make sure you're not overloading your electrical circuits. Use one of those power bars with a circuit breaker in it. And use the right lights for the right occasion. You know, don't try to put indoor lights outside.
Huge floodlights on your small Christmas tree doesn't
All
work.
Things in moderation.
Yeah. Hey, Dylan, what do you know about this?
Well, I guess don't be the dad in Christmas Story.
Right.
Like, you know, trying to...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some spectacular holiday light demonstrations around town, right? The Griswold thing. But yeah, try not to be like Chevy Chase was in that movie.
And how fast those trees go up. I think we've all probably seen the demonstration of a tree that, and you'd be surprised how fast the tree will dry out.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And there's some videos online that
just go up like a torch.
Yeah, yeah, very fast. Very fast, especially once they get dry.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, it's the holidays. You have some people being a little bit festive. You have gatherings of people, and things can get a little crowded, you know, with candles on a table or something. Things get bumped. It's, you know, a little more tenuous than other times of the year.
Very true, yeah. A lot more risk. A lot more risk.
So do you really see a big spike in calls like that over the holidays, or is it just a matter of you're trying to keep people cautious? Does this actually play out?
Yeah, it does play out. It does play out. You know, Thanksgiving is traditionally the busiest fire day of the year nationally in terms of house fires.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
Wow. Thanksgiving Day.
Wow.
But the holiday season, the winter months in general, we typically see a spike in structure fire activity because of all, you know, people are running their furnaces, fireplaces, candles, all of it.
That fireplace that gets used three times a year
in
Tucson.
Yeah, right.
And has never been cleaned.
Yep, that one.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
I think I've told this story in holidays past, but when Ann and I were just starting out, we were up in, I was working up in Las Vegas in the media, and it was our first home, a town home. And hey, we had a fireplace. We were so excited. So, we did have to call the fire department. Let me tell you what happened. Well, we didn't open the flue.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and so I bring that up because folks use the fireplace maybe a couple of times a year. There is a flue.
Mm-hmm. And you got to do that. That'd be helpful.
Yeah.
Open the damper.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, luckily Clark County Fire got there very quickly, so... Anyway, but that's just a word of caution. Make sure that the fireplace is properly ventilated. Yeah. And, you know, it wouldn't hurt to... There are chimney sweeps, Dylan.
Yeah.
And Chief, mm-hmm. who might... It might be a good idea if you haven't had somebody look at at the chimney to take a look. There can be a lot of buildup, can't there?
Yeah, absolutely. The creosote can definitely build up.
Can I jump in one?
Yeah.
Just to finish that thread real quick.
Yeah.
Something maybe not as directly dramatic, but do you see a lot of carbon monoxide calls with people who are, you know, cranking up that furnace and it's not working right?
Yep, absolutely. Definitely the CO calls go up during this time of year as well for that exact reason.
And that can kill you?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it's
quietly but fairly swiftly.
But fairly swiftly, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, having a CO detector, a carbon monoxide detector in your home, along with a smoke alarm, is a very wise idea if you have any sort of gas burning appliance.
I should probably check those
furnace,
batteries,
hot water heater.
Yeah.
Unless you have an all electric house, because then there's nothing to produce the carbon monoxide. But if you have something that produces combustion in your house, it's worth having one.
And check the batteries. Use a holiday or some kind of a marker every year to check things like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I came here from a place that observed daylight savings time, and I'm so thankful to be somewhere that doesn't, because I hate changing the clocks. It never made any sense to me. So, you know, like your birthday, pick a day and mark that as, you know, and pick a 6-month day because of the batteries, depending upon, you know, mm-hmm. the quality of the battery and whatnot. Just but like you said, find a day and make it your smoke detector day.
All right. Overview of the department right now. Are you in good shape, Chuck Ryan?
We are. We are. You know, we've been able to work with city leadership. We are fully staffed. We are actually hiring above our allotted headcount so that we can keep pace with known attrition. We know when people are going to leave the system, when they're ready to retire. So in order to kind of dampen the peaks and valleys of hiring and retirements, to kind of squash those peaks and valleys into a more manageable sine wave, if you will, we've done some overhiring to prepare for that. Certainly a city of this size, we need to build back in some resources into the system that were lost after the Great Recession, and I'm working very diligently with the city manager's office on the best way to move that forward.
The upgrade program on the 22 stations that you oversee, there are some areas where you do need improvement.
Yeah, we do. We still have 3 stations. So thanks to the Tucson voters back in 2017, 2016 for approving Proposition 101. Those tax revenues, that tax expired, you know, last year, but the tax revenues that were collected during that time frame are still being used for capital projects now. So we have three more stations that will be complete teardown and rebuilds, stations that were built in as early as the 50s that are just, they don't have any of the really the modern safety standards that you see in fire stations across the United States. So we're going to upgrade those three stations. We're also having touch points on a lot of our existing stations, making some health and safety upgrades. But overall, we're in a good shape and a good place facility-wise right now.
Here's Dylan Smith from Tucson Sentinel.
So you have 22 stations. Give people an idea of the scope of your department. How many employees? How many trucks?
Sure. So we, like you said, 22 stations covering the entire city. One of our stations is dedicated to the Raytheon plant in an agreement with Raytheon Missiles and Defense Corporation. But we have a total of 600, we're allotted 645 sworn personnel, commissioned firefighters and paramedics. We're supported by approximately 55 professional staff members. And on any given day, there are approximately 60, 65 units in service across the city, and that comprises your, what we call engines, which most people call pumpers, mm-hmm. Ladder trucks, our paramedic transport units, rescue trucks, and then some various command vehicles, our hazmat support unit, things like that.
When people see a fire truck showing up at a medical call, there is confusion. Why is that truck at a place where someone may have like a heart attack or something like
sure.
that?
Sure, that's a great question, Bill. We are lucky here. We have fire-based EMS, so every one of our fire engines has a paramedic on it 24/7. So when that happens, we send the right resources to the right call, but the closest unit that has the resources on it for that type of call, somebody calls and says they're having chest pains, if one of our engine companies— Could be a block away. The ambulance might be 3 miles away.
Right.
So let's get a paramedic there quick to do an assessment. And so that's why people see fire trucks on medical calls all the time.
And that gets me to the question about the 911 system. Have there been there? I know there have been upgrades.
Yes.
How is that working out for you and your team?
I think it's working well. I mean, we have a ways to go. We're doing a lot to kind of shed the non-emergency calls off of the 911 system.
Somebody's doctor appointment fell through. Could you get a paramedic out here to have?
Right. All of it. Yeah. Or somebody needs, you know, their prescription refilled. So we have a group that works through those types of calls with folks to help them find the services they need without having to send a fire truck or an ambulance.
Could
to
you
that
get
person.
Me over to Walgreens?
It's yeah.
No,
it's,
no.
That's not what 911 is for.
Correct. Dylan Smith.
I can speak from some personal experience as to why you roll a truck along with an ambulance. Mm-hmm. Almost exactly a year ago, the Monday after Thanksgiving last year, mm-hmm. I had a medical emergency.
You did have a medical emergency.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I had a stroke.
Okay.
And so it took four or five firefighters to get me out of my house.
Right.
And properly onto a gurney to get me down my long driveway.
Right. Yep.
And if you hadn't rolled a truck along with the ambulance to show up at the same time,
yeah,
those guys would have had to wait.
Yeah, yeah. If you think about it, you know, when you go to an emergency room, there's not just one person seeing you. There's multiple right. people engaging with you. It's sort of the same thing, and it's for the patient's safety and for our safety as well. You know, people have weight. It's not safe to manage a patient with just two people sometimes.
I got to the hospital that much more quickly because of
exactly
the way you handle those calls.
Yep.
And had a fine recovery, I might add, because of the time element was so crucial, right, Dylan?
The more quickly you get treated when you have a stroke, generally the better your outcome. And I was at UMC very, very quickly, thanks to you folks, and I very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
And
glad you're okay.
The fine doctors and nurses and everybody at the hospital had me better within hours. I wanted to go home. I went from being unable to move half my body to wanting to go home
it
within a matter of just a couple hours.
Three people to hold you down.
Pretty much.
Dylan, I know you wanted to bring up a health study, but it is time to take the break. Why don't we kind of tease that for the next segment?
Well, there's nothing healthier than, you know, a good cup of coffee and, you know, maybe a nice Danish, right?
Right. I want to talk about Mona's. And Mona's, of course, is the home of the Danish Kringle. Danish Kringle, doesn't that sound Christmassy? I think so. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Might want to think about one of those beautiful Kringles for your holiday party. Would be really nice Christmas Eve morning or Christmas Day morning. Steve and the team are ready for all of your holiday baking. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. And if you're out and about, check them out right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Chuck Ryan, the chief of the Tucson Police Department. And Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. It's Buckmaster on the first Friday of December. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Our Friday Focus interview today. Chief Ryan is here. Chuck Ryan, the fire chief in the city of Tucson. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, let's turn it over to you to begin the questioning for SAG number two.
All righty. I don't want to get too technical because we could really get down deep in some weeds with this, but Tucson Fire has been involved with several studies about cancer prevention. You guys are exposed to so many chemicals in substances when you're working. We've heard, you know, a ton about PFAS,
yep,
and the firefighting foam.
The forever chemicals.
And that, yep, can cause, you know, some pretty terrible cancers, but other exposures as well. And you've been part of studies about how to mitigate some of that. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so like you said, without getting too deep in the scientific weeds, the nature of the things that... So let me say this. The number one type of fire in the United States is a residential structure fire, right? So if you think about it, for the three of us around this table anyway, the stuff that was in our parents' house, the homes you grew up in, we grew up in, furniture was largely made of natural fabric with natural fillers, wood frame. Everything since the mid to late 70s forward is plastic. It's solid flammable stuff, treated with, you know, flame retardants. So those products of when those things burn, carpets, furniture, drapes, all of it, it's synthetic fuels that are burning. So that said, the rate of firefighter cancer has risen dramatically in the past 50 years. If you went to go back in the history books and look what was killing American firefighters in the 1960s and 70s, it was fire. Fast forward to the late 70s and the 80s, it was cardiovascular issues. Fast forward to the 90s and 2000s, it's cancer. Cancer is the number one killer of firefighters in the United States and Canada. So that said, something had to change. Something had to be done. And here in Tucson, this department was on really at the pointy end of the spear with cancer research with the University of Arizona to determine levels of cancer in firefighters and mitigation strategies that fire departments, firefighters can take to lower those risks. The risk is always going to be present, but it's how you manage that risk. And some of it's super simple and some of it's complicated science stuff, but I'm super proud to be leading a department that really is on the cutting edge of science to the point where Dr. Jeff Burgess and his group at the university just this past year were able to get the International Association of Research on Cancer, IARC, to classify the actual occupation of firefighting as a known carcinogen.
Mm. Wow.
So what are some of the things you have incorporated into your routines about how to mitigate?
Yep. Super simple stuff. Take a shower after every fire. Go back to the station. We have firefighters have two sets of turnout gear, the coat and the pants and the mm-hmm. helmet, all that. Clean that stuff. It gets bagged and taken to a proper cleaning facility. So our folks have a second set of gear they can change into. Take a shower afterwards. Make sure the breathing apparatus that we wear, the SCBA, is your face piece is cleaned and washed out. Hose everything down. It's really getting it off your skin. We have, they're called fire wipes, but in all essence, they're baby wipes, mm-hmm. right? And it's amazing that even though a firefighter now is almost fully encapsulated going into a structure fire, one of our guys or gals comes out of the fire and they start using those wipes and it's gray or black by
it
the
is,
time they're done.
Even with all the gear?
Even with all the gear, even with the Whoa. Particulate resistant stuff.
Gosh.
So, and we do a really good, if you go by a house fire, a building fire in Tucson, you'll see firefighters standing out in the street in their gear, we call it gross decon, being with it's simple. It's a bucket and a brush and some Dawn dishwashing liquid, yeah. and they're getting scrubbed down before wow. they take that stuff off. Our engineers, those are our equipment operators. If you go by a house fire in Tucson, you'll see that the guys or gals that are operating the pump panel, sending the water to the hoses into where the crews are fighting the fire, are wearing their air packs. You don't see that in many other places in the United States. I've never seen it. And the department I came here from, we never even thought of doing that back in the day. So it's really a trend-setting department. It really
is. That's very different than the way things used to be.
Yes.
My dad was a very active volunteer firefighter in Wisconsin when I was growing up.
Right.
And, you know, he had one set of turnouts.
Yep.
And he'd go off and fight a fire somewhere and, you know, no breathing apparatus, you know, just a coat and boots and a hat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, gloves. And you would come back home and, you know, take his stuff off and hang the coat by the door and leave his boots sitting there. And that was it.
Yep. Wow. Yep.
Maybe take a shower.
Yeah. Yeah. It's we've come a long, long way thanks to the research.
That's going to save lives.
It will save lives. And honestly, it's a really, you know, from the business side of it, it's about the people, most certainly. But from the business side of it, you know, from a municipal government side, it's worth the investment. The stuff is expensive. The gear is expensive. But here in Arizona, as in most other states, firefighters are covered by a presumptive cancer act. So there are 16 types of cancers that if a firefighter within 15 years of retirement develops it, it is a rebuttable presumption that it's linked to their occupation.
Wow.
And so that cost then gets transferred to the authority that, you know, the municipality or fire district that you know, employed that firefighter. So the more we can do on the front end to mitigate not only the physical risk to the firefighter and their family, but also to the city and to the taxpayer too. The investment it pays off in innumerable dollars.
Very innovative.
Treating people right make it easier to recruit and have them stick around.
100%. 100%. And you brought up, Dylan, a great point about the recruitment. You know, fire chiefs across, not just across the United States, but across the world are talking about challenges with recruitment. Overall recruitment numbers are down on average of 50%. Whereas,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. Whereas before, you know, we would see 1500 to 2000 applicants for an entrance exam. We're lucky if we get 400 or 500. And it's a worldwide issue. And part of it, I think, I attribute to the fact we've done such great stuff in the research world, but some people really question, do I want to do this for a living? Yeah. Do I want to expose myself to
business.
This risk?
Yeah.
And so by showcasing all the things we do as an employer to help mitigate that risk makes it a lot more palatable.
Your recruit academy is going well?
We're getting ready to start one mid-January. We'll have 35, 36 brand new recruits starting for the 22-week process.
Is your department a Class 1 department, and why is that important?
Yeah, so we are. We are a Class 1 ISO, Insurance Service Office rated department. And that's important because that tells the city, the residents and businesses we serve, that they are receiving what the insurance industry says is the highest level of fire protection available in the United States. And what that translates to is a reduction in the hazard insurance premiums that everybody pays. If you're a homeowner, building owner, mm-hmm. business owner, mm-hmm. the fact, and you're within the city limits of Tucson, the fact that you have a Class 1 ISO rated fire department saves you a substantial amount of money every year on your fire hazard insurance premium.
Yeah, because you have to show, I know I live in the county, and I for my insurance, I have to show I have insurance.
Right.
Fire protection. Yeah. In my case, it's with Rural Metro, but you have to show the certificate mm-hmm. to get insurance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's very important. We just renewed it. We just went through the renewal audit from ISO this year, so it's good for another 5 years, and it's a real feather in our cap, and it's really good for the city.
It's called International
Insurance Services Organization, ISO.
Insurance Services Organization.
Yep.
Okay, Dylan.
That just kind of popped into my head. One of the little tidbits of news related to your department lately was an increase in fees for fire marshals doing inspections.
Yeah.
For certificates of occupancy.
Yep.
As part of the city, you know, gradually ratcheting up a number of fees. I know you don't set the cost of that, but tell us why, you know, the fire marshal inspections are so important and we need to be doing this.
Yeah. So our fire plans review covers both structural and then for those structures that need fire suppression systems, automatic sprinklers, restaurants that have commercial kitchens, they need, you know, hoods and so on and so forth. It comes down to a life safety issue for the occupants. It's a investment protection for the business owner, the property owner, and it's a life safety measure for the firefighters that would have to respond to a potential fire in those buildings. You know, the the fees. I arrived in Tucson in September of 2019, but the fire marshal, the fire inspection fees haven't been touched in well over a decade. And we're way behind comparable municipalities. And it's a cost of doing business. The money that those fees generate goes back into the city's general fund. It does not come directly to the fire department. So we're just being contemporary with other cities that have similar arrangements, similar fee structures.
And how often do you get back out to check places out that are not a new building opening up? Are they done extensive remodeling?
So if the building is going through extensive remodeling, if it's being permitted, then our inspectors, they have to go through an inspection process. For buildings that are just static, if you will, we try to get into the buildings once a year. I mean, it's a big city. We got a lot of inspectable properties, what we call state licensed facilities, hospitals, nursing homes, care centers, schools, things like that. We're in there yearly. That's a legal
gathering spaces where you've got a bunch of people who might be looking for an emergency exit.
Places of assembly. Yeah. Yep. All of that. What we are starting to do is to ramp up, a high rise inspection program. The city, you can't drive around the city and not see vertical construction taking place. So we're ramping up a designated program to make sure we're getting into not only the new high rises, but the existing mid rises and high rises, just for like a checkup to make sure that, hey, the systems still function as intended, the fire alarms, all that stuff works, the exit doors are working, all of it. So That's coming starting in January.
Okay. And in a high-rise fire, you're going to need ladder trucks. Do you have enough?
No. we have enough to meet the need right now, but what we need is we really need another truck in our system right now, and that's a conversation the city manager and I have been having. Back after the recession, the fire chiefs make decisions at the time they're in place, and I'm not throwing stones at people that preceded me, but there was a shedding of some resources. Hindsight's always 20/20, but that was probably not the best decision. And so now we're trying to play catch up from decisions made well over a decade ago now. We definitely need another ladder truck in our fleet right now. And like I said, we're working on that with both, because that comes with the additional costs of the staffing, of the gear, of the support personnel. So It's a process, but we're working on it.
And you can't just order it and it's going to come in a month.
No.
It's going to take a while.
So we are, right now, the fire apparatus market is looking at about a 40-month lead time for the heavy
40
equipment.
40-month?
40, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
is
there's
there
a whole
company
bunch of
that
factors.
Just one company that kind of controls that market?
No.
No?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's what's holding the market. Well, it's a variety of factors, but it's... the commercial chassis are supplied by the commercial vehicle manufacturers. And then the fire truck manufacturers put a custom body on that, right? They build the truck. Getting the motors, getting the chassis, getting the wheels, all those component parts, I hate to use the word supply chain, but it's supply chain issues going back to COVID that have been hampered. Electronics, most of our vehicles now are very, very, like most modern airplanes, right? There's far more electronics than mechanical parts. And it's almost the same way with the modern fire apparatus. Ambulances are a little better, but we're still looking at 2 to 3 year lead times on new ambulances.
Mm. So with all these new, mid-rise buildings around Tucson, with your largest trucks, how high up can you get with a ladder?
Depending upon the building setback from the street, typically the 8th to 9th floor is about the highest the ladder will reach.
So that's fairly high up.
It's fairly high up. Yeah, for Tucson, yep.
Yeah.
Drones going to sometimes be used for firefighting in the future?
So we actually have a drone program, a UAV program right now. We don't use them for firefighting, but we do use them for things like hiker rescue, and large incident situational awareness for the incident commander. We fly the drone over a large incident, and that gives real-time eyes on the incident to the incident commander. Certainly having the capability to bring a bottle of water out to a lost hiker, and pinpoint them till our crews can get there. That's new within the past couple of years, and that's real exciting stuff. There are companies out there working on drone technology for high-rise fires to get water up to a high level quickly, and in order to buy some time until the firefighters can get up to that level within the building.
We all worry about the urban wildfires. Are you risk? Is the risk management now looking at a whole map of our city?
Yes. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture, U.S. Forest Service, and Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management have a released very just within the past few months a map, a tool that shows wildfire risk in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And suffice it to say, you think the Sonoran Desert here in southern Arizona, what's there to burn, right? Well, we have buffle grass.
Oh, yeah.
That invasive species, right? So,
which is really, I understand, hard to put out.
It's virtually impossible to stop. And so the city of Tucson, the central city core is in a good shape. But if you go out to the the foothills, mm-hmm. the surrounding, the edges of the perimeters of the city, there's some really high risk areas. So what we really want to focus on and what our wildland coordinator, and people say, why is an urban fire department, why is a city fire department in the wildland business? Well, because the risk of a wildfire starting in the perimeter of the city and spreading into the city is actually quite high. I don't want to scare people, but it's true. So there's simple, really simple things people can do to mitigate that risk, right? We call it defensible space. Clear brush away from your house. If you have trees touching your roof, how about limbing them up and getting them back? You know, things that really can make it's called a firewise community. And so we really need to start sharing that message more widely within our community, because it is a very real risk. And the wildfire problem in the Southwest is no longer seasonal. No. It is a year-round problem.
Yes, it is. All right, Dylan, we're out of time with the chief. Did you have anything for real, a quick one?
I think he covered it.
I think we really covered a lot of ground, and we always do with Chief Ryan. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me again. Happy holidays.
Yeah, I hope you have a great holiday season for you and your family. I've got a couple of quick questions for Dylan. We'll talk about those questions right after this break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website ChavezSince67.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. Thanks to Chief Chuck Ryan. Had a good discussion with the fire chief. Covered a lot of ground. Dylan Smith with me from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, you've got a quite extensive story at TucsonSentinel.com. A reporter from the public station, one of the public station radio stations up in Phoenix, KJAZZ, was arrested at a demonstration at Raytheon, not on Raytheon property because they lease this particular property from the University of Arizona at the Tech Park. What's the bottom line to this story, please?
Well, we still have a bunch of questions that need to be answered about why this took place. Generally, it's not a great practice to arrest reporters who are covering something and not being in the way, not disturbing any law enforcement action, and not endanger themselves or endangering anyone else. It's our job as reporters to observe and report, and a lot of law enforcement folks think it's good to have reporters there as, kind of an independent eye on what's happening. That
yeah,
way,
we kind of mentioned that to the to Chief Ryan, and he said he's never had. They don't have any problem with reporters.
It's not just a sort of a he said she said situation between cops and the people who are being arrested. There's somebody else there as well, but others, don't want to have eyes on them while they're doing their police work.
And this was an arrest from the Pima County Sheriff's Department.
Correct. So Pima County Sheriff's Department, in fact, has a
policy,
an extensive set of policies in their general orders about how to deal with reporters, and including at scenes of incidents, crime scenes and such. And their policy in writing is to let reporters do their jobs. And in this instance, a reporter was not allowed to do her job, even though someone who was there as a participant in the protest was allowed to take video of her being arrested. And that person wasn't arrested. She was arrested, handcuffed, and taken away.
And she
along
was
with
saying,
a bunch of the people who were there protesting. There were 26 people total who were arrested and charged with trespassing.
Pro-Palestine group of people. But anyway, it's interesting because she was handcuffed just as she was on her way out to her car.
Yeah, she was actually leaving the property.
She was done with her business of observing and was arrested.
And, the deputies who arrested her knew she was a reporter. Acknowledge that she was wearing her credentials, carrying reporting gear, her camera, microphone. As she was being arrested, one of the deputies took her camera and handed it to the protester who was there videotaping things.
What?
They were saying he didn't want to break it. But, there are questions about, one, why was a reporter arrested for doing her job? And why was someone else who was basically functioning, exercising their First Amendment rights to be a member of the press in an informal way. If somebody's there doing the same thing in a non-professional capacity, why were they allowed to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And then Sheriff Chris Nanos told us that he had never heard of these policies in the department's general orders about allowing reporters to do their jobs.
Mm. But you and your team didn't have trouble finding the policy, or did you?
Well, we actually asked, in trying to track it down, and the spokespeople for the department sent us a screenshot of just part of a page of the policies, but didn't include the part of the page that specifically says, hey, let reporters do their jobs, basically, even though they could have just sent us a link.
Yeah.
So it was that interaction, it's, you know, trying to ask questions about this incident was a little bit disingenuous.
A little communication breakdown.
They could just, you know, explain clearly why they did this, but they don't seem to want to answer too many questions at this point.
Yeah. Dylan, we've only got about a minute to go, and I know this is a very important time of year. The Tucson Sentinel is a nonprofit. You do rely on the generosity of the Tucson and Southern Arizona community. If someone is so inclined to donate over the holidays, they have a little extra incentive, don't they?
Well, right now, if you support the Sentinel in our nonprofit Watchdog Newsroom, your money can go considerably farther. You can triple it. Right now we have not just a match that will double it, but an additional match. So if you give us a donation, if you sign up to, you know, say give us $25 a month, that actually gets matched on an annual basis. So it's not even just that if you give us $25, we get another $50. And you triple that money. It's matched all through the year. So if you become a member of our Watchdog Club, at whatever level you choose, we will get twice that amount, you know, of the whole amount you will donate over the next year to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, get a lot of bang for your buck as far as getting our reporters at the Sentinel out digging into the desert dirt, asking questions that some people don't want to answer.
And some news organizations won't let everyone go on to their website. They have what's called a firewall. You
a
do
paywall.
Not a paywall. Firewall.
We very purposefully do not have a paywall. We believe that everybody in this community should be able to be informed and read what we report. And it's in our best interest, all of us, that people be well informed and be able to have, you know, good grounded conversations about things. We're a wiser, healthier, safer, more productive community if everybody knows things. So when you support the Sentinel, you're not buying the news just for yourself. You're making sure that your neighbors know what's going on, and your family and your coworkers and people who live on the other side of town all have the same sort of access. We don't believe in a paywall and, you know, cutting people off just because they choose to not pay or they can't afford it.
All right, Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com, and at TucsonSentinel.com, there's a few prompts that will get you to the donation place, right?
Yep. Okay. If you go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog.
All righty. Thank you for
thanks very much
being a watchdog. And if we don't see you before the holidays, our best to you and yours, Dylan, okay?
Back at you.
Everybody else,
be safe out there, please.
All right. We will take a break right here. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell's next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
And let's run with it. It's time for Weekend Watch. Stir it up, baby. Weekend Watch presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive to a lot of fun and great hiking possibilities in the Gila National Wilderness. Bring your goose down jacket. It can be a little chilly, but it's fine for hiking. Let's see. They're going to be up, mid-60s. That's perfect weather by next week in Silver City. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for all the info about great things to do, great places to stay, and some really good dining for New Mexican cuisine. Speaking of dining, this guy knows a little bit about it, Mr. Matt Russell, the longtime host of Weekend Watch. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. Just stirring it up as instructed. I'm always compliant, Bill. So, yes, ready for the weekend.
And Weekend Watch, one of our hallmarks, has been another opening, and we've got one.
We sure do. You know, I got to tell you, this new restaurant opening has been something that so many of us have been waiting literally years for. You might remember Tucson's own Dr. Andrew Weil. Launched his first True Food Kitchen in Phoenix more than a decade ago. And now there are more than 40 locations nationwide. And finally, there's one right here in Tucson. It's up at La Encantada. And True Food Kitchen has a menu based on what's called the anti-inflammatory food pyramid. So lots of full flavors from healthy ingredients. But I'm not talking about tofu and sprouts, Bill. You're going to find gourmet burgers and steaks and fresh seafood, pizzas, just a little bit more mindfully prepared. So if you haven't been to a True Food Kitchen, you're in for a treat. Make sure it's on your weekend calendar.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, checking out True Food. They've been in other markets. Now they are back. They are, well, they're...
And it's about time.
It is about time. This is a long-time festival. I know that you're very excited about it. It's a heritage festival, also featuring one of our staples.
Of course. And, you know, you can hear the sleigh bells ringing now. And on Saturday at Casino del Sol is one of my favorite holiday events of the year. As you said, it's the Tucson Tamal and Heritage Festival at the casino's Ava Amphitheater. So it's tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And you're going to enjoy more tamales than you can count, plus fried bread and tacos, burritos, kettle corn and churros, and live entertainment with Aztec dancers and mariachis. And, Bill, the best part? Admission to the event is free. You only pay for your food and beverages. So 'tis the season for tamales, and Casino del Sol will have all the action tomorrow.
When I'm at the Contiki, I feel like I'm back in Tahiti.
Indeed. And, you know, you might remember, you know, shortly after Hawaii became our 50th state, a number of these Hawaiian restaurants opened up all across the country. They were known as tiki temples to introduce the region's cuisine here in the U.S. Sadly, there's only a few left, but thankfully, Contiki right here in Tucson is still going strong some 60 years later. And Bill, to celebrate this tiki culture, they just launched a weekly series called Truly Tiki Nights. And it's every Sunday from 7 to 11 p.m. They're going to have food specials, special vintage cocktails, live DJs playing surf music. So this Sunday night is going to be a truly tiki night. So throw on that favorite retro tropical shirt. I know you have one, Bill.
I know you have. Yours, let's just say yours has been at the laundry and it was not picked up. It's not picked up for a long time.
The more obnoxious, the better. Yes.
All right, Matt Russell, have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Right back at you.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, presentation of me and my company, Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our daily radio show. Original theme music was composed by my German friend, Christophan. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, making sure that all of our podcasts are up and ready for you in a very timely manner at buckmastershow.com. Everybody here at KVOI is so good to us, makes us feel so welcome at the Buckmaster Show, including my longtime engineer and producer, Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. Hope you have a lovely weekend.